From the highest of mountains to the deepest of concrete jungles, the world is strange and full of mystery. Join us as we descend into the dark and explore the strange wilderness.
Welcome to Strange Wilderness, the show that takes you out of the comfort of your homes and pulls back the curtain to show you the strange and untamed world we live in. I'm Ginge, and my co-host, Matt STFU, and I invite you to join us as we investigate the things that go bump in the night. Do you have a story you'd like us to read and discuss, or possibly suggestions for future topics to cover? Send us a message over on Twitter at strangewildernesspod or send an email to strangewildernesspod@gmail.com. Thank you, and enjoy our descent into the dark.
What's up, explorers? This week's episode will be a little different from what you're likely used to here on the Strange Wilderness podcast. With Ginge being out of town for the week, we've decided to dive deep into the archives of podcasts past, say that five times really fast, and bring you the collaboration that inspired the show you've come to love and possibly hate. I'll give you a bit of context. Earlier this year, I did a short-form show called Call of the Void. Each episode was between roughly 5 and 15 minutes long, and was effectively just me telling a story about something involving aliens or UFOs, just all things extraterrestrial. This show will be coming back as one of the side projects we'll be releasing periodically in the new year, but for now, this is the season finale from that show, where Ginge joined me as the first and only guest. You'll notice a much more serious face kind of tone behind everything, and that's because the nature of the show wasn't nearly as bantery as this one, so please bear with us. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this unique peek into Call of the Void, and be sure to tune in next week, since we'll be bringing you strange and wild presents on both Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Alright, enough of my voice, let's get to the episode, where you'll hear much more of my voice. Strange Wilderness Matt, signing off. The universe is a dark forest. Every civilization is an armed hunter, stalking through the trees like a ghost, gently pushing aside branches that block the path, and trying to tread without sound. Even breathing is done with care. The hunter has to be careful, because everywhere in the forest are stealthy hunters like him. If he finds other life, another hunter, an angel or a demon, a delicate infant or a tottering old man, a fairy or a demigod, there's only one thing he can do: open fire and eliminate them. In this forest, hell is other people, an eternal threat that any life that exposes its own existence will be swiftly wiped out. This is the picture of cosmic civilization. It's the explanation for the Fermi paradox. These words come from a famous passage in Shishen Liu's science fiction novel, The Dark Forest, which paved the way for the theory to be discussed today. In essence, the fundamental force driving all life is the will to live, And given that there is truly no way of knowing if any and all other life forms in the cosmic void can and will destroy you given the chance, the safest course of action is to stay quiet and avoid all contact of any kind. And if contact is to be made, destroy the other life forms before they have the chance to do the same. It's a haunting principle, to be sure, and could very well explain why, despite humanity shouting its existence into the cosmic void for nearly a century, we haven't gotten a response. This theory was expanded upon by scientist David Brin. However, his theory relies more on robotic probes from these civilizations, rather than spacefaring warlords. He states, quote, "It is consistent with all of the facts and philosophical principles described in the first part of this article. There is no need to struggle to suppress the elements of the Drake equation in order to explain the Great Silence. Nor need we suggest that no ETIS anywhere would bear the cost of interstellar travel. It need only happen once for the results of this scenario to become the equilibrium condition in the galaxy. We would not have detected extraterrestrial radio traffic, nor would any ETIS have ever settled on Earth, because all were killed shortly after discovering radio." End quote. Now, I want to take this a step further and propose a theory that could possibly explain not only why we haven't heard back from any potential cosmic neighbors, but also why we find things that resemble the human form but fall short so unsettling. The Uncanny Valley is a hypothesized relation between an object's degree of resemblance to a human and our emotional response to said object. It suggests that if said object does not perfectly resemble the human form, feelings of revulsion, discomfort, and even terror are often evoked in the human viewing the subject. So, with all of that in play, allow me to freak you out. What if, at some point in humanity's past, at any stage of our evolutionary path, we encountered a civilization of advanced extraterrestrial beings vaguely resembling us, who, much like the Dark Forest theory suggests, proceeded to exterminate as much of humanity as possible? This created a response in us, which was passed down through time until the present day. In psychology, genetic memory is the term used to describe a memory that exists at birth, but lacks a sensory experience, and is incorporated into the genome over long spans of time. In short, a memory that you did not experience, but an ancestor did. This experience was so vivid and visceral that it was passed down through our very DNA, to the point where you are able to feel it years later. So, what if this vaguely humanoid race of extraterrestrials laid siege to humanity at some point in Earth's history, creating a sense of fear, dread, and unease that has survived through time thanks to genetic memory, which we in the modern day know as the Uncanny Valley? So the whole idea behind this is that the reason why, you know, if you look at like a mannequin, we feel so uneasy is because at some point in Earth's history, a race of vaguely humanoid beings came to Earth and more or less just killed most of us. The reason why they came and killed most of us is so that we couldn't in turn go and kill most of them, based on the whole Dark Forest theory. And the result is that through genetic memory, however many eons later, we get freaked out when we see mannequins. And it's because we, in our the back of our minds, our lizard brain, our lizard ancestor brain, looks at that and sees the aliens that, you know, put the hypothetical laser gun to our head.
So I obviously have a few theories of my own. Those theories are frightening because they could be true, you know, and that is the issue with, you know, extraterrestrials or aliens, as, you know, they're better known, because you just don't know, you know. To our knowledge, they have never made contact with us. And if they have, who knows? And it may have been in a way that we all did see or hear or whatever it might be, but we don't know. One of the biggest things for me, and some people might know about this, is like the sounds in the sky, and that sort of stuff, you know. And a lot of it can't be disproven because you don't, like, you can't, you don't know what it is. And the problem with it is as soon as you, like, if you hear those sounds, your body starts to kind of go into that fight or flight mode. You get, like, the goosebumps. Like, it makes you feel very, very uncomfortable. And to me, for me, that would personally be them trying to make contact with us. But again, you don't know. It, you know, they say it's like, oh, it's skyquakes or whatever it might be. But it's like, in my kind of, you know, conspiracy brain, where like things, I don't think like that. Like, I do believe that they are trying to contact us in some way. Like, I think that that is their way of doing that, you know. But what is scary, like you said, is maybe them not contacting us is a good thing. And maybe the fact that we haven't reached them is a very good thing. Because, one, I don't think that our species is smart enough or kind of at the point where we would be able to comprehend what is happening with them. And I think we would be very quick to simply retaliate, and maybe they weren't coming for that, or they were, who knows, because we would simply see them as a threat. But the other side of that is they might see us as a threat because we are, maybe we're different from them, or we are the exact same thing as them, and, you know, you're coming face to face with somebody who looks like you, and you're just like, this isn't okay, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because there's a huge, well, I say huge, but it's relative to what it used to be, but there's a very large disclosure movement happening right now in the media, where a lot of military officials, former fighter pilots, and people like that are coming forward with their own stories. They're declassifying, videos of alleged UFOs, and the way that they're treating this in the media, by and large, I won't say every single person, but most of the people who are doing these interviews are treating it like it's a threat. And I think it's by design, where, much like the Dark Force theory, it points to the fact that these, like, we don't know what their intentions are, and so you have to assume the worst, because if you go in blind and very naive and ignorant to what their intentions could be, then it could turn into, you know, a mass extinction event. And beyond that, I mean, we as a society are a very young society in the cosmic calendar, but beyond that, we're a very violent society and very temperamental. And I think realistically, if you're like an alien species watching Earth as if it were a reality show, like, you would probably go in guns blazing, shield up just in case, because we're very much the shoot first, ask questions later kind of people. And I think even beyond that, a lot of the people in this disclosure movement are saying things along the lines of, well, you know, if this advanced society is as advanced as we think they are, to the point where they're able to travel crazy distances in such a short amount of time, or, you know, warp time and space, hop between dimensions, whatever the theory might be, they've evolved past the point of what we consider evil. And that very well might be true, but that doesn't correlate to the fact that they might not just wipe us all out.
And so some things I kind of, like, I was super excited about this because I don't think about aliens in the sense of kind of the scary part of it, though obviously it does kind of get a bit scary because, I mean, the thought of something coming to Earth that isn't humanoid and seeing that would obviously be very jarring. And I think most people would be like, I'm about to die, you know? But there's like a couple things. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Rh negative blood type.
I haven't, actually.
You haven't. I suggest you look into that. If you're listening to this, look into that. So Rh negative blood, which I possess, is thought to be around 15% of people in the world have it. And the theory behind it is that at one point, somebody or something came from somewhere else out in, you know, the universe and actually kind of, you could say, made it its way into the human race. And what's crazy about this, so if a woman gets pregnant and the baby that she possesses holds the same kind of blood, which would be Rh negative blood, her body actually attempts to get rid of the baby because it sees it as a threat and basically an unknown entity within its body, kind of like a tumor or something like that. You know, it's trying to get rid of it and everything. And so it's one of those things that constantly have to try to give the baby and stuff like that. I forget what it is, but they try to kind of make it so the baby is okay. And all of these people actually possess a lot of the same sort of things. They usually have blue or green eyes. They have red hair. They have like cool body temperatures, are super sensitive to hot temperatures. And a lot of times, and obviously if you believe in this side of things, they believe that you also possess very different kind of things, like where maybe you can see spirits or you have visions or things like that. And obviously this is all just a theory, but it is kind of a really crazy one. I don't remember what country it's in, but there is a very concentrated spot where these people kind of exist. They speak their own language and everything like that. And yeah, but it's one of those things. It's like something like that I could believe. And it brings me back. So Alien versus Predator and all that. I don't know if you've seen the movie Prometheus.
Yep.
So it's one of my favorite, like favorite movies, because to me that's something that like I could totally see happening. And in this sense, I believe, you know, if this was kind of that theory, I believe that it was an alien species that came to us, possibly not wanting to eradicate us, but more so bring us to their kind of level. And unfortunately, as humans, we are not able to. And so all you kind of possess are just these little things, you know what I mean? And so it's just a really fascinating and crazy thing. I think the History did it, or the History Channel did it on Ancient Aliens. And like I said, you can go all over the internet and look it up, but it's really crazy.
It's kind of funny that people will mock Ancient Aliens, and I can completely understand why, because a lot of it is just sensationalist garbage. But, you know, the whole ancient astronaut theory is actually, it's grounded in a lot of realism, and it helps explain how cultures separated by thousands of miles that, you know, otherwise should never have interacted in ancient history have the same creation myths, have, you know, a lot of overlap in terms of gods and you know, their mythologies. But beyond that, it does also explain how, you know, there are these kind of genetic abnormalities in some people, and how some there's another thing where it's, I think it was like I think the person was literally just called a chimera, but they had like a different strain of DNA. They had like a different strain of DNA, and it was one of those things where their kid had a different set of DNA, and so they biologically were not related, but were also related. And it was like, it's, you hear things like that and you think, yeah, there's something going on that, as conspiratorial as it sounds, points to the fact that something probably happened in our prehistory that laid the groundwork for this to be even possible.
And that's the thing about chimerism. It's hard. Like, I remember watching something because it fascinated me, and it was on TV, or I might have seen it on YouTube, but it was a child that didn't possess the DNA of his father, but did of his mom. And so I think she had, like, I don't know if she had cheated on him, or it might have just been that they were, like, applying for something and they needed to do a blood test to make sure that, or a DNA test to make sure that the child was theirs. And that's when they found out that he basically wasn't the father, and so they weren't going to give him the benefits. I can't remember, like, the full thing of it, but then I don't know if it was, like, a couple months later or, like, a year later, he was diagnosed with chimerism, which was why he didn't have that DNA. And so literally, like, he just came from somewhere else. Like, his DNA structure, other than his mother, is something or somebody else. And obviously bodies are crazy and they do the craziest things, but, like, stuff like that is, like, that's not normal. And there's no explanation of it, really.
Yeah, exactly. And part of the ancient astronaut theory points to this hyper advanced race that more or less came to Earth for resources, you know, found our ancestors, you know, whatever they would have been in that evolutionary path, and more or less seeded them to become more intelligent so that they could mine these resources for them. I think the most popular one was the most popular theory is they talk about how these aliens needed gold for whatever which reason, so they more or less fostered humanity to mine this gold for them. There's another really interesting theory out there, and it's starting to crop up a lot more now because of this disclosure movement, and it surrounds not necessarily aliens being extraterrestrial, but actually existing, like, coexisting on Earth, I should say, with humanity, not necessarily in plain sight, but in the deepest parts of our oceans. And it's almost like the film The Abyss. What it basically states is that this civilization has existed since humanity was evolving and is at whatever stage of their evolution as well, and they're at however, or they are as advanced as whatever they might be. And the reason why a lot of UFOs are spotted near water or are seen diving into the water or something to that effect is because they're basically going home. And it kind of explains a lot of things regarding why not many of our oceans have been explored, or a certain percentage of our oceans have been explored. And it's because, well, they've tried and they have basically been told, go home, we don't want you here, we will blow you up. Beyond that, it also potentially explains a lot of myths regarding, like, great floods or things like Atlantis, where, you know, it's not this advanced race of humans that were involved in it. It was something adjacent to humanity that, you know, basically took their giant spaceship city or whatever it is and went into the ocean. And it's really interesting because at that point it kind of goes against the whole dark forest theory, but it could still potentially tie into my theory about the uncanny valley, where, you know, they could be basically humanoid but, like, fish people, and because of that and things like maybe Atlantis, or maybe they did trigger a great flood and that's why we have it in so many cultures, and that's why we get really uncomfortable when you're playing a video game, for example, and the texturing and the modeling is really good, but then you look at the eyes and it freaks you out.
So it's funny you mentioned the dark force, like, your that theory and everything. So I am somebody who loves to hike. I love to be outside. I love to be in nature. And I'm sure I'm you might have about the missing, like, 411.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I've read some of them and I've watched a few of the documentaries.
Okay. So That honestly is one of the things that really got me into quote unquote conspiracy theories. Because as somebody who's been out there and I love to go kind of hiking alone and everything like that, I can definitely say that there is some weird stuff that happens. And a theory that I do believe, some people believe it's like the military kind of just scooping people up for experiments or whatever. But something that I believe is that there is a civilization that lives within our national parks or maybe underground or, like you said, in the ocean or whatever it might be, that kind of prey on those who are out there and vulnerable, because it usually happens to people that are alone or to children who are going to be the most vulnerable. You have the things where, you know, a child goes missing for like 7 days and then they show up out of nowhere and they're perfectly fine. You know, they're missing like a shoe and that's it. And for me, that's like, ooh, like, did they get, you know, taken away? Did they step into like a dimensional kind of rift or something of that sort? Because it that's not normal. You know, a child would not be able to survive for 7 days without food and water in a forest. You know, an animal would get them at some point, you know, or they would drown or whatever it might be. And so, you know, there's a lot of supernatural kind of beliefs around that. You know, I have, like I said, being out there, I've seen some things, I've heard things, like it's very unsettling because you can't place it. You know, you can't place what you're seeing, you can't place what you're hearing because it doesn't sound natural. But at the same time, you know, when you are alone and you hear things, or, you know, like at night when, you know, it's very dark and, you know, you start seeing things kind of transform in a room or whatever it is, like your brain tries to make sense of everything that's happening because that's how your brain works, you know. So like if you've never eaten fish before and it doesn't happen to be a very fishy tasting fish, something like tilapia, your brain's going to be like, oh, this tastes like chicken, when it doesn't at all, you know. And so what's crazy to me is, in this sense, when you are out in, you know, the forest or whatever it might be, and you hear things and see things, and your brain can't do that, that's when it becomes scary, because it's like your brain is literally wired to do that. And so, like I said, it's one of the things that really got me into conspiracy theories and stuff, because it's like, is it that, or is it our military doing experiments, or, you know, is it escaped aliens in some way, or, you know, whatever it might be, in that sense. So
it's kind of interesting, because it's true. Like, a lot of people who go on hikes, and it really doesn't matter where, like, just, I'll just use the wilderness as the generic term, but it could be, you know, the Camelback Mountains in Arizona, it can be the Rockies, it can be, you know, Banff National Park in Alberta, it can be Florida, it can be parts of Europe, it can be pretty much anywhere where there's, you know, like a large outdoorsy wilderness kind of area. And yeah, they'll go missing inexplicably. I remember there was one story about like a 5-year-old kid who was walking in the forest with his grandparents, and he literally ran ahead of them, not like, he was still within eyeshot, and I think the grandpa turned away for less than a second and turned back and the kid was gone, and they found him like 4 days later, completely fine, a little tattered, you know, like looked like he was just a little dirty and was missing his shoes. And it's things like that that, yeah, makes me think that people are being picked up in some capacity. And there's kind of two theories that I'll put out that kind of revolve around that notion. The first centers around a lot of these alleged underground bases and places where they say aliens are working with humanity. So one of them is in Dulce, New Mexico. There's Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. There's Area 51. There's a lot of them. Denver International Airport is another really apparent. Yeah. And so basically, a lot of these, I'll use quotations, quote-unquote, whistleblowers will say that, you know, in the 50s, humanity, specifically the states, But I would argue other major governments, probably like Russia, maybe China, struck a deal with some alien races where they basically say, you know, we'll give you technology and we won't wipe you out if you give us people to experiment on. And that's where a lot of these abductions are apparently coming from. That could explain the weird things that people see. That's why a lot of people see UFOs and, you know, bright lights and orbs and whatever in these outdoor environments, because that's, you know, they're basically, that's where they thrive and exist, is to prey on people who are separated from a large metropolitan area where there's a lot of people. And the second theory ties into less conspiracy, more kind of existential conspiracy, I suppose, where it's these interdimensional beings that have existed alongside us the whole time, but because they're at an altered state of consciousness, or they're, you know, they just exist on a higher plane, you know, it's almost like us looking at a two-dimensional drawing where the cartoon might be real and they might be sentient, but they can't comprehend us because we're three-dimensional. And so that could potentially also explain how these people just vanish without a trace and then pop back up. It's because they're more or less being pulled into a different plane of existence that is basically, you know, like a national park, but in the eighth dimension or something to that effect. And then they get brought back down after they serve whatever purpose they've served. And that's the end of the story. It's very interesting on both sides. And it's kind of funny that you mentioned just like hiking and being out in the wilderness and stuff, because an alternate take on the dark forest theory is that if you go into a forest, typically it's quite loud. There's a lot of animals and bugs and just a lot of buzzing and chirping and whatever. But when there's a predator around, say like a wolf or, you know, like a mountain lion or a bear or something like that, all of the noise kind of stops. And it's, you know, so that they don't give away potential positions, and so these animals don't get got by the predator. And so an alternate theory to this dark forest theory states that that could be why, you know, aliens are so quiet around us, is because there could be one out there that is kind of the big bad Thanos level alien warlord, conqueror, whatever, that has basically scared all the other civilizations into silence so that they don't potentially get wiped out like whatever civilization may have been the victim in the past. And it's terrifying, because then you have humanity and we are ignorant to that fact, obviously, because we don't definitively know that alien life exists, and we are just shouting into the void. You know, we sent out the Golden Record with Voyager, and we're sending out radio signals, I would argue, almost daily. One of the articles that I read talked about how they were broadcasting episodes of I Love Lucy into space, which is just terrifying in and of itself, but that's a discussion for another day. And so we've been screaming into the void for, like I was saying, almost a century, and, you know, we might be that civilization that's made an example of, because we don't know any better.
So I will now tell you my actual, like, this is what I really believe. And it's very scary and very unsettling. And it kind of goes towards that, like, lizard, you know, people type of thing, but not that. So I firmly believe that there are aliens, or, you know, extraterrestrials. I can't say that word, I'm sorry. Extraterrestrials that live on our planet alongside us. And to me, they are people that blend in with us. They are humans. And I'm positive that a lot of people listening to this, since it's a kind of, you know, alter type of podcast, you probably heard of, like, time travelers, where, you know, you'll see the same person throughout time. And to me, it's it's a very big belief of mine that they exist with us and they don't make themselves known, because why would you? There's no reason to until the time comes for the need to happen. And, you know, they're here with us. They go to school with us. They are friends, whatever it might be. And they don't give off that funky vibe. And to me, I think that's the scariest part, because if they are here and they are able to kind of pull through these dimensions and stuff and, you know, all that kind of stuff, it's pretty crazy. I think his name is Neville Goddard, or I can't remember exactly what his name is, but he is somebody who fully believes that you can kind of either dimensional jump or kind of plane jump. And like, if you were to sit in front of a mirror and stare at yourself for like 5 minutes without like taking your eyes off, you have a light or a candle next to you, you can start seeing yourself move. You can start seeing yourself getting up and walking. It's kind of like astral projection. And for me, you know, and quite a few people believe us, that is the plane on which they exist. But they are able to come through that door frequently and, you know, as much as they want and undetected. And they are here kind of to study us, to see how we work, and whichever way that might be. And, you know, maybe it is that kind of when you get that like uneasy feeling around somebody, you know, but they're not doing anything weird, you know, or whatever it might be. Like, that is just like, it's hard for me to believe that there are aliens out there or whatever it might be that haven't already come to this planet. You know, it goes back to the RH negative kind of theory and all of that. Like, it's hard to believe that we are alone, especially on this planet. And, you know, with our population getting to where it's at and, you know, resources starting to become kind of in danger because of how much we use of it and such, one of the things, and you know why we're going to Mars and everything like that, which RH negative blood is thought to have come from Mars or Venus or something of the sort, actually thought by scientists. I think in that sense, they're here to either save us from the inevitable kind of eradication that we do by ourselves, or they're here and they're waiting for the right moment to hit us, kind of like you said, like, you know, with the Thanos just waiting to give the like the command to just go ham and get rid of us. And, you know, like I said, the sounds in the sky and all that kind of stuff, like, to me, that's them communicating to them certain things. You know, and with more and more kind of sightings happening and the military releasing, you know, these sort of documents that were redacted back in the day and all that kind of stuff, it just seems to me like something is picking up, and that is really scary to me.
It's a good point that you bring up, where we won't know until that day comes, but a lot of people theorize that, yeah, these aliens, or any sort of, whether it's extraterrestrial, interdimensional, or just terrestrial living in the oceans kind of thing, society, the reason why they are sighted oftentimes near like military bases and places where they have stockpiles of nuclear weapons is they are, well, one theory points to the fact that they are basically just trying to save us from ourselves, because, you know, it's nothing ends well with nuclear arms. It's mutually assured destruction, and that's why there hasn't been a nuclear war, because, you know, it will just end the species. But the other theory is that they deactivate these things and show that they can deactivate these weapons almost as like a flex, where they're basically saying, you know, your greatest weapon means nothing to us. We could wipe you out with a thought if we really wanted to, so don't even try. And it kind of comes back to the whole genetic memory thing, where, like you were saying, like, you can just be around someone and not necessarily know them, or you do know them, but not well enough that, you know, you can vouch for this person, and you get that uneasy feeling. And it's similar to how genetically, like, some people get scared by thunderstorms, for example, or, you know, seeing lightning or spiders or whatever it is. Like, those phobias come as the product of genetic memory, where, you know, like, for example, like, arachnophobia might come from the fact that, like, one of your ancestors was either deathly afraid of spiders because of an experience that they had, or they were someone they know got hurt or killed by, and, you know, it works its way down the line. But that could entirely describe why there are those people out there that you get that uneasy feeling by, and it's because, whether intentional or not, they give off that vibe that just screams, you know, I am a questionable character. And I think, to some degree, if that is to be believed, then there are beings out there that do it intentionally just to keep people on edge, and there are some that don't do it intentionally but give off that vibe regardless. I would argue that, yeah, if aliens have come to Earth in the past, the likelihood is they never left. The likelihood is there is a small subsection that never left and is still here. And it could be in realistically any capacity. Like, you hear stories about, you know, the astronauts that went to the moon during the Apollo missions, and how, I believe it was Buzz Aldrin, said something along the lines of they saw, like, craft, and I don't know if it was buildings as well or something like that, but toward the dark side of the moon, and they were basically told in no uncertain terms, you're not allowed to come here. And, you know, there's the story of, I believe they were cosmonauts who, on one of their first missions into space, saw what they described as 30-foot tall beings that basically looked like angels. They had these big luminous wings, but they're in space. And it kind of, you know, the possibilities are endless, because realistically speaking, aliens could take any form. We don't know. Like, we, I believe, as humans, associate them how we would associate humans. And you watch a lot of these shows where they kind of get creative with what aliens could look like, and you see a lot of animals and, like, squids and birds and whatever, and they look nothing like what a human would, obviously, but generally speaking, we as humans tend to associate them more as humanoid, you know, bipedal, vaguely human-looking creatures, and even, like, greys, for example, like, they're humanoid.
I was actually just gonna say that, yeah.
Yeah, they're vaguely humanoid. They have the giant heads with the almond eyes and the nose and the slit for mouth and either no ears or just holes for ears, but they are still, you know, they got two arms, they got two legs, they're bipedal, so they are vaguely humanoid. So I definitely think that there is something to that, and it's not, I mean, it is conspiratorial, but it's not something that is spoken about all that often, because you're basically branded as a quack. And I think it's because people like, you know, David Icke and people like that come out and they write these books and they do press tours where they're accusing the Queen of being a lizard and things of that nature. But realistically speaking, you know, if you look at it with a more critical eye and you don't sensationalize it like a lot of these quacks do, the implications are terrifying, and there is a lot of evidence to back it.
Definitely. And, you know, kind of going back to the ocean aspect, so I can't say who this is because I don't want to get him in trouble. So I'll just kind of say they. There's a lot of submariners who hear a lot of things when they are down in the depths of the ocean to places that most humans will never go, where they have heard sounds, where they submarines have been not hit, but they have been nudged and such. And then I don't know if you've heard about the low frequency that you, like, the human ear literally cannot pick up, but there's this low frequency sound that is being put out by what's believed to be a whale that is one of the last remaining of its species. But if you go a step further and you kind of go to the ocean theory of it, I don't think that that's a whale. I think personally, if that was to be what's happening with the alien side of it, I think that that is them. Perhaps it's them trying to either communicate with us, or it's them sending out a sound, because it's a very eerie, not okay sound. You can find it on the internet, and they play it. They kind of they turn it up and speed it up just a tiny bit so you can kind of get the feel of the sound. But, you know, when you have like the Marianas Trench and you have these shelves where, you know, it just falls off and there is nothing, and it's almost like it's unnatural for there to be straight lines on any place of the earth. That just does not happen. But there are so many instances of that in the ocean. And so it's almost like, okay, so how did that happen? You know? And it kind of goes back to, like, you know, the whole Prometheus thing. You go on to, you know, a different planet and you see stuff like that. And it's like, oh, there is this long straight line and it's not made by humans. It's literally been there since who knows how long. And it's like, yeah, that's not natural, you know. And there's, you know, just seeing that kind of shelf drop off in an ocean is just so freaky. And then you have, you know, your fault lines and stuff like that that, you know, make issues and stuff like that. But it's just crazy that there are so many theories, and part of me wishes that, like, they would just do something that, like, everybody knew about. But then I, like, think of Independence Day, and I also don't want them to do that. So it's just like, no matter what, I don't think as a human, like the human race, I don't think that we're ready for that sort of thing. Which is kind of a bummer, because I wish and I hope that within my lifetime I get to see something happen with that. But I think the possibility of that happening is very slim, because I don't believe our government will allow it to happen. I'm surprised they ever released the stuff that they did about pilots and stuff like that. But I think that just had a lot to do with the Space Force and, you know, finally being like, listen, we're starting this thing where we're going to try to protect ourselves in space. You know, to me, that was one of the biggest, like, yeah, there's something out there and they know it and they are going to try to protect us from it.
Yeah. And with this whole disclosure movement, a lot of the people who are coming forward are not necessarily high ranking military officials, but they've worked, you know, as fighter pilots, or they work for the Department of Defense or various organizations. And one of them specifically points to the fact that it would be a very somber day for humanity, a very bittersweet day for humanity, where, you know, like factions like religion would just crumble, because everything that you knew and believed in is basically just being thrown out the window with the emergence of these new creatures. And it's kind of funny that the Pope at one point said, well, you know, aliens exist, and like, I would baptize an alien, like, you know, they could be God's children, it's fine. And it's more progressive thought than, you know, the witch burning era of religion from times of old. And a lot of these people are more or less pointing to the fact that, yeah, we as a species are very reactionary, and we're also very ignorant to what happens around us. People like to live in their own little bubble, and so interfering with that little bubble and saying everything that you believe in with regards to your existence, you know, religion or any stream of belief, is wrong because aliens. And the reason why I say it's bittersweet is people like me, while it would be terrifying, like, I believe that if we ever make first contact, and I'm on the same page as you, where I hope it happens in my lifetime, where if we make first contact, it will be a terrifying day for everyone. But once that initial fear settles, a lot of people, myself included, will sit there and almost see kind of the fun and cooler aspects of it if they don't immediately blow us up. And then there's the opposite side where the, you know, a lot of these major institutions and, you know, the world's governments and places like that will have a lot put into question and a lot put into perspective, to the point where things like religion would kind of be put through the ringer, where some religions will completely just fizzle out and others will have to restructure to be able to accommodate this new kind of emergence of alternate streams of consciousness or belief or whatever it might be. And it's just a really interesting thing, and I'm hoping that we do end up getting some sort of breakthrough. But I'm on the same page as you, where I think that it is a pretty big if, and I think it's because if we are to believe that this has been happening, at the very least in the States, since as early as the 40s, like around Roswell, then the government has been sitting on information like this for 70 years and hasn't done anything with it. And it's terrifying. And a little kind of tangent, but it kind of revolves around this whole topic, where I was in Japan and I was in the technology museum with a friend of mine, and there's a lot of areas that exist in plain sight in this museum but are locked off. And it's, you know, every museum has it, where, you know, it's like an archive or they have exhibits that they put away or whatever. But because this museum is specifically centered around technology, we kind of joked around about it, but there was a serious tone where we said, how many black budget projects exist behind those doors or in places like that, where, you know, we're seeing some hyper advanced uncanny valley robots, but they have things behind those doors that are like iRobot level advanced. And it's the same thing with these aliens and all these theories, where they say, you know, they potentially have known about this since Roswell. And if you think back to even like Nikola Tesla, like he was trying to send radio signals into space. And if they've known about this for close to a century, then they probably, you know, what they're telling us is probably like 1% of what they actually know.
And, you know, I think kind of going back to, you know, us humans as a whole are very quick to call somebody crazy who they don't agree with, or who they think is crazy because, you know, maybe they can see things or whatever. And I think, unfortunately, that's what holds us back in a lot of ways, because if it's unable to be scientifically proven, then it's not real. And unfortunately, I think that's what holds us back in so, so many ways. You know, just because you can't prove it with science does not mean it's real. Science, after all, is just theory. Obviously, you know, it's a lot of it is very, very true, and, you know, it's helped us really kind of move forward with a lot of things, but that is the true definition of it, you know. With people who go ghost hunting, we'll say, or, you know, people who claim to be mediums or whatever it might be, how do we know that they're just, like, they're more in tune with things that most humans are not? And then you have the human, like, the people who refuse to acknowledge those things. You know, maybe these people are kind of, I'll say, in tune again with other beings. And to me, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't see, like, I would never sit there and be like, oh, she's crazy because she sees ghosts. You know, it's like, oh, well, maybe her brain is a little bit, you know, either developed more than mine, or it's just wired differently, or, you know, something like that. And that could even be brought to aliens in the sense of different dimensions or different planes or whatever it might be. To think that we are the only beings, and I could talk about this for hours, but to think that we are the only, like, smart people or, you know, species or whatever it might be, and the vastness of the universe to me is just, it's idiotic. Like, it is, it's almost like selfish and arrogant to believe that, because how is that possible, you know? How maybe there's another, you know, planet just like ours with people just like us who are us, you know, maybe that's what causes deja vu, you know, that sort of thing. And then, you know, kind of like talking about the Pope and saying that, you know, aliens exist. Obviously, there are the archives and there are places where if you have the correct credentials, you can get into. But then there's the whole section that absolutely nobody is able to go into. And for me personally, that's where I think this sort of stuff is hidden. You know, they say once a new pope comes into office, or I don't know what it would be, but like when the new pope comes in, they have this little box and they open it up and there's a message in there. And I sometimes wonder if that message either reads "there is no God" or "our God is, you know, the," or I shouldn't say our God, but "the God that is known isn't the only God," or something of the sort. I think that those archives down there hold so much information that I believe would probably propel humanity into a higher state of being than it is right now. But one, we're not ready for it. And two, I don't think most people would believe it.
It's true, yeah. And I agree. Humanity as a whole is very narcissistic. We, for the longest time, believed we were, you know, the Earth was the center of the universe. And realistically, like, that is so far from true. And it's kind of interesting that you mention alternate planets that could be fundamentally the same as ours, where there's a theory that basically says that if space is truly infinite, eventually you're going to get to a point where every conceivable possibility has been created. So there is another Earth with another you somewhere in space, however many trillions and trillions of light years away, that is literally the same with one small difference. It's almost like a multiverse, but on the same plane of existence, where because the universe is endless, there's eventually going to come a point where it has to have overlap. And I do agree with you about the whole Vatican archives deal, because there is so much locked under, you know, lock and key. And it's a little different with the world's governments, where I was watching a program where they were talking about how, of course, the president's not going to know everything, because for the president, it's a short, you know, it could be as short as 4 years. It's a job. Where with these cardinals and these popes, like, they're there for more or less their entire life. And, you know, a lot of these popes will live and die in their position. And so it makes a little more sense to give them that kind of access or something to that effect, where they have, I would argue, still a limited access to a lot of this information, but access nonetheless. And because they're there for, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70, however many years until they bite it, they are sitting on more information than I would argue most of the world's governments sit on as a figurehead. So most presidents and prime ministers or chancellors or whatever. And it would be really interesting to know what that message is. And I think the scariest one would be, just from a religious standpoint, would be sitting there and having a piece of paper that says there is no God, especially as the Pope. And then you have to go out and basically proclaim this message knowing what you know. And that's scary to me. And I would like to think that, you know, we are getting to that point where as a species we are ready. I mean, we're not at this current point, but I would like to think that we are getting closer to that. You know, people are becoming a lot more open-minded with regards to things like this, and I think that's part of why this disclosure movement is happening. I think it's a multifaceted thing. I think there's a lot of good and bad as to why they're pushing that narrative. The good being that I think people are becoming more open-minded, you know, like if you think about mental health, for example, like 60, 50 years ago, if you went to the doctor and said, I have depression, they'd put you in a padded room. And the conversation surrounding it now is a lot more open-minded. And so I think extrapolating that toward things like aliens, we're starting to look at people who've had experiences in a more positive light. And I think it's like you were saying with things like mediums or people who are said to have ESP or something to that effect, you know, there are the obvious quacks where you look at them and you say, like, yeah, they're hamming it up for the views. But there are also those people who either don't talk about it for fear of being ridiculed or, you know, are more humble in their approach, that are probably, there's probably something more to it. And the scary implications of why disclosure is happening, and I think you're right when you talk about Space Force, is I think something is either being, like, the groundwork is being laid for something to happen, or something has already happened that has set things in motion such that the public will need to know. Like, something will happen. I'm not sure if it could be, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 100 years, or tomorrow, where something happens and the government basically is like, yeah, like, this is why we've been, you know, drip feeding this information to you over the past 4 months. And it's scary. It's a really scary thought, because at that point, like, you're basically gonna just rip the Band-Aid off, pull the veil from over our eyes, and say, there is a lot that you need to be afraid of, and that's, one, why we kept it from you for, you know, the better part of a century, and two, why we're telling you right now. The question now is, and we're gonna go kind of like way back to when we were talking about the oceans. So obviously James Cameron does a lot of exploration. You know, he did the exploration of the Titanic, and there's all those documentaries where he's in the little submersible. So obviously he came out with Avatar, you know, 2009, I believe it was, and Avatar 2, 3, and I believe 4 are on the way. Maybe even a fifth one, I honestly don't know. But apparently the sequel, like the direct sequel, Avatar 2, deals with aquatic species. So my question is, what did he see in Earth's oceans to kind of prompt that? Like, why? Because you don't just think, I'm going to do like an alien movie about water aliens. Like, it's something that is not necessarily uncommon, but it's something that made me think. Like, I was watching one of his dives, and, you know, the way that they're shot and things like that, like, before he hits that point where, you know, you can't have people free diving around him with cameras, it's shot very well. Aesthetically, it's very beautiful, but then he goes into, like, the darker parts of the ocean, and it's like, yeah, like, you know, you're in a place where the pressure is immense, there's no light, and even just the sea life that we know of gets really weird down there. You know, there's a lot of bioluminescence, a lot of really trippy animals, you know, like,
beautiful like, oddly beautiful.
Exactly, yeah. And the question at that point is, what did he see? And I would argue that he saw something. And there's stories out there, you know, that's kind of the point of this show, but there is a story out there that I probably will touch on in a future episode, where allegedly there was a Russian submersible during the Cold War, if I'm not mistaken, that was sunk as it was diving, and basically one of the last radio transmissions was talking about how they encountered something that basically told them to turn around, and they didn't listen, and so they were forcibly removed from the population.
Ooh, that gave me the chills.
Yeah, it's kind of freaky, and, you know, at that point it begs the question, like, okay, well, what about the Bermuda Triangle, and what about, you know, blue holes in various parts of the world, and places like Antarctica and you know, places that have a lot of these sightings or strange phenomenon or something like that, but also disappearances. And at that point, you're thinking it could be that we're not taking these warnings seriously, and maybe the world's governments, or at least some of the world's governments, know about these things, and that's why they're starting to drip feed this information to us. Is maybe it's like, well, we pissed off the wrong group of these creatures, and so we kind of need to let you know so that it's a lot less shocking when, you know, soldiers start coming out of the water.
Oh geez. Oh yeah. You know, and for me, I don't know if you know this, but I have a huge fear of the ocean. I do not like it. I refuse to go into it. I am, like, deathly afraid of squid and all of that. But I am the type of person, even if I fear it, I love to watch it to try to get over that sort of thing. And to know that, one, we haven't explored even a fraction of the ocean. We do not know the true depth of the ocean in certain parts. The Marianas Trench, I believe, was thought to be the deepest at one point, but I think they know that that's not true now. And it is just, it's so eerie to me, and it really, really makes me scared, because in those unexplored parts, like you said, it might just be them being like, don't come here. Like, do not come here. Maybe, you know, planes that are flying over that go, you know, the planes that disappear in the middle of nowhere, you know, and you hear nothing from them. Maybe they're getting taken down because they're flying over an area that is technically not ours, you know. And it makes me so scared, because I don't want to be like dragged into the ocean by like something. And, you know, like it's very scary. Like, I don't like that theory whatsoever. But at the same time, it could make a lot of sense just because of the fact that we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a lot of anomalies. Like you mentioned, I think you were talking about the bloop.
Yep.
The low frequency noise. There's also another one, I believe they called it Julia, and it's a very similar low frequency, but it's I think it varies a lot more, like it sounds more like a blip. And those, you know, you have those kinds of phenomenon, and you have things like the Baltic Sea anomaly, where it literally looks like a spaceship in the Baltic Sea, I believe it is, and it's, you know, through scale and stuff, they said that it's like this massive, I think at the minimum, I think they were saying it's like 60 feet in diameter, and it's this, it in essence looks like the Millennium Falcon, if you're using more pop culture references. But it's, you know, this massive thing, and they talk about like a ramp, and they're, like you were saying, like nature doesn't work in straight lines, and so you see things that look like potential runways in places like the Bahamas. And it does beg the question, like, what exists that causes these things? And yeah, it's, I don't have that fear, but I do have the unease, specifically when you can't see what's under you. You know, like I was at a cottage a few weeks ago, and the water there is extremely dark and very murky, to the point where you can't see, it's very hard to see your hand in front of your face when you go less than a foot down. Like, you just dunk your head under, you can't see your hand. And, you know, even at that point, you're kind of going, that's freaky. And it's a very deep lake, and you're going, what's in here? And yeah, I would argue the same thing of the oceans, to the point where there will come a time where we develop some sort of technology that can withstand the pressure, that can be down there for months at a time without having to resurface, and we're going to end up triggering something that we shouldn't have. So, just to kind of cap things off, I will ask you the question, have you had any extraterrestrial experiences or things that you can't quite explain that you'd be comfortable sharing?
Oh yeah, definitely. So, like I said, I like to go hiking a lot. Me going outside, and that was one of the hardest things during like the first lockdown and everything, is they really wouldn't let us outside. And for me, it's my way of kind of like getting stress and anxiety out and everything. I love to put my feet in the grass and everything. But, you know, I love to go hiking, and I especially love to do it alone because it just lets me think and everything. And I remember one time really feeling like I was being followed. And it's something you'll feel often when you're out there. And I think it's more so just a very much like you're just making sure that there's nothing around you. You know, you're making sure that there's not a mountain lion or, you know, a bear or something like that, you know. And I always carry some sort of weapon with me in case something happens. And so, like I said, I kept feeling like something was either watching me or following me, and I would hear twigs kind of breaking and everything. And so I automatically just assumed that I was being followed by like a mountain lion, and it wasn't. And there was something standing behind a tree, and it was staring at me. And I would say it was more so like a shadow person as something, but I don't believe that that's what it was. I do believe that it was... I can't say that it wasn't of this world. It definitely was not a human, and it was not a animal. And I remember standing there in a state of just fear, because like I could not place, and it goes back to that thing of like our brain tries to associate whatever we're seeing or hearing to something that we know, and my brain couldn't do that. And I remember just being like, whatever this is, it is going to get me. And then it just disappeared. And to this day, I still don't know if I was just like hallucinating, or if it was truly a being from another world or whatever it might be. And then as far as like just supernatural things, and in many ways, you know, like I see things all the time. I have for a long time. You know, I see shadow people, I see all that. But again, it's like, I don't always necessarily believe that it is like ghosts or whatever it might be. I think it is more so just things from other worlds that are very interested in us, and they don't necessarily want to be like, hey, by the way, I'm in your house, like let's have a chat. I think it's more of a, I'm gonna show her me, or you know, whoever it might be, and I'm gonna see how they react, and you know, maybe like we can start actually making contact. And I think it's happening to a lot of people. More and more people nowadays are coming out with stories of their own. And obviously, like you said, there, you know, you have a lot of people, unfortunately, that talk about these things and it's not really happened to them. But, you know, you have the people that, you know, realistically have seen these things and, you know, all of that. And it's hard not to believe them, especially when it's like, you can feel that story and you can see it in their eyes that whatever it is either scared them or just really, really made them not feel comfortable. So I actually have a video that I'm going to be putting up on YouTube here soon, kind of talking about my experiences in that aspect.
Food for thought. No matter where we are on Earth, and no matter how much we build and destroy, we are at the mercy of a wild, uncaring, unforgiving planet that's full of terror and mystery. Be sure to follow Strange Wilderness on TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and SoundCloud for the full immersive experience. Until the darkness calls us again, thank you so much for listening, and stay safe out there. Because out in the wild, anything can happen.